right now.
This is
2FM's Game On.
Hello there and good evening. Firstly, big thanks to Demi and Mikey for driving us through the afternoon. It is Thursday, October 16th. I'm Shane Dawson and you are listening to Game On. Coming up between now and the new music show at 7, Maeve de Burke and Rebecca Cray preview the Sports Direct Women's FAI Cup Final. Bernard Jackman looks ahead to this weekend's URC action, including the big Leinster-Munster showdown. Well, Jeff Shepherd has the latest NFL news. If you want to have your say on any of the above or anything else besides, you can text 51552, message us on WhatsApp 0871879200, or find us on X at GameOn2FM.
This is
2FM's
Game On.
Yes, hello there. Good evening. Thank you for joining us. Lots to get through between now and 7 o'clock. And we are going to begin with some golf news because a sensational back nine propelled Shane Lowry into a first round lead at the DP World India Championship in New Delhi after a tidy 2-under-par outward nine. Europe's Ryder Cup hero reeled off 5 birdies on the trot between the 11th and 15th holes to jump into a share of the lead with Japan's Keita Nakajima, who had set the early pace with a 65 in the morning. Coming to the par 5 18, Lowry needed a birdie to take sole possession of the lead, and he achieved that to post an opening round of 64. So Lowry currently leads by one stroke from Nakajima, with Casey Jarvis a shot further back on 6 under par. Shane Lowry was speaking to the assembled Indian media after his opening round.
So you're by and large known for your short game. You're sort of an inspiration for every golfer out there. And DGC being a course where short game is more prominent than driver game, do you think that gives you a bit of an advantage over other people?
Yeah, well, I just think the type of golf course suits me. It's like, you know, you need to shape it around the course and you need to hit it in position off the tee, and it's all about your iron play. And, you know, my iron play is my strength, one of my strengths. And I took advantage of that today and, you know, managed to roll a few putts in on the back nine, which was nice.
Shane enjoyed it with the monuments around and everything, history at the backdrop. You enjoyed the course?
Yeah, it was nice. You know, I actually said to the boys on the 17th tee, I was like, it's hard to believe how old these buildings are and monuments. It's pretty cool and it's nice to be here, and yeah, we had a nice day today.
Did you expect to score this kind of round that you had?
No. No, I played pretty poorly in Madrid last week, and to be honest, I didn't do any practice the weekend, but I came here. I played really good in the pro-am yesterday. So I was pretty happy where my game was at then, but you know, as expectations were going, I didn't know what to expect, to be honest. I just wanted to go out there and shoot the best score I could, and thankfully that was pretty good.
Shandu's a year, like, you know, winning score, do they think of the thing?
No, I have no idea. It's never as low as you think, so we'll see. Hopefully it's me.
Five consecutive birdies, I think, from hole 11 to 15. Can you talk to us a little about that?
Yeah, I just started to see my lines on the greens, and I hit some good shots, and any time I got a chance, I converted it. So it's nice to get in a role like that. It's been a while since that happened, so it's nice.
Shane, you were asked yesterday, I'm going to ask again. It's your day two in Delhi. Have you got a chance to try any Indian beers yet?
No. I'll save them for Sunday night, hopefully.
Okay.
So Shane Lowry, the leader. Rory McIlroy is 5 shots adrift of his compatriot in tied 17th after carding a 3-under-par opening round in which he left his driver out of the bag.
It's pretty tricky. You know, you're just really trying to, you know, be as conservative as possible off the tee, and then, you know, you're trying to pick off birdies on the par fives and then maybe pick up a couple more. But yeah, it's a tricky golf course. I thought some of the hole locations early on were really tricky. You know, I think you play a practice round or a pro-am and the pins are all in the middle of the green, and then you get on a tournament day and they start to tuck them away a little bit. And the course definitely played a little tougher than I expected it to be.
And did I see that the big dog was out of the bag for the day?
Dog was out of the bag, having a sleep in the locker. I was sort of thinking about it last night before I went to bed. I was like, well, sometimes if you're really conservative off a par 5 tee, you might need like a 5-wood in to the green, but I'm never going to hit driver. So I just thought, I've got a 2-iron, 3-iron, 4-iron all the way through, and then I've got a 5-wood just in case I need to hit it for an approach shot in a par 5. But just don't see any hole out there that you need to get it more than sort of 260, 270 off the tee.
The third Irish player in the field, Conor Purcell, is languishing on 2 over par. The Dubliner paid the price for driving into the bushes off the tee on 13, eventually incurring a treble bogey. You can see the full leaderboard on the RTE News app and the RTE Sport website.
Game on. Rugby.
Now, Bernard Jackman is with us to chat rugby. And Bernard, we have Thursday team news. And what we know is that Ireland out half rival Sam Prendergast and Jack Crowley will face off in Saturday's Leinster-Munster-URC clash at Croke Park. 5:15 start for that one. The pair have never played against each other and square off just 2 weeks ahead of Ireland's first test against New Zealand in Chicago. Prendergast starts as one of 7 changes made to the Leinster team that beat Sharks for their first victory of the season last weekend. Their first starts of the season for 4 British and Irish Lions and Orgy Snyman. Jack Conan, who started all 3 tests in Australia, James Ryan in scrum half, Jameson Gibson-Park will make their seasonal debuts with 2 more Lions, Dan Sheen and Andrew Porter, prime for action off the bench. Meanwhile, for the second week running, there are 10 changes to the Munster side, with captain Tadhg Byrne among the changes to the team that beat Edinburgh on Friday. Edwin Adogbo makes his first start since December 2023 after a successful return from injury as a replacement against Edinburgh. Shane Daly, Thakir Abrams, Dan Kelly, Jack Crowley and Eden Coughlin all come into the back line. Coughlin and Crowley pair up in the halfback. Snow, Craig Casey there from Munster. Let us begin our conversation with the big news, the out half battle. How heartening, how exciting is it to see these two square off against each other?
No, I think it's brilliant. I think they're the two people that have been talked about most in Irish rugby for the last year and a half, and we've never got to see them play against each other. The sense was when they were both rested last week that this would happen, and I think it's great. And it's not the only thing that Andy Farrell will be looking at or taking into account when he makes his selection for the All Blacks, but you'd have to feel it will have a bearing on who gets the start over in Chicago. And yeah, Sam's playing at home. Sam's playing with a star-studded side, so you'd imagine he will have it a little bit easier. But you know, that also creates an opportunity for Jack Crowley, who is the more experienced of the two, to make sure that he puts Munster on the front foot. And I think it's an exciting Munster team. It's interesting, you know, I think Dan Kelly obviously gets the start ahead of Nankerville, and he's been really impressive since he was signed over the summer from Leicester Tigers. You know, there's danger in their backfield with Andrew Smith and Nankerville playing on the wings. They're obviously missing Craig Casey. That is a blow, but it's a great opportunity for Eton Coughlin. But in the forward pack, you know, Brian Gleeson and Edwin Adogbo didn't get named in the full Irish squad this week, but they have been selected to travel to Chicago. So that is a big boost to them. They're both players who I suppose a lot of the Munster fans have been waiting for Edwin to come back from injury and Brian Gleeson really to get an opportunity, because both of them are, anything they've done so far has been exceptional. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing both of them in the pack. And obviously Tadhg Byrne coming back in at 6. I saw a stat last week that he played some of the most minutes of any international in the world. So he certainly earned his extra time off. But Munster will be hoping he gets back up to speed really quickly and then go after Leinster at the breakdown in particular.
We're all talking about both tens and the battle between Sam and Jack. The fact there's no Craig Casey, how does that change the kicking game, and does it add extra pressure on Jack Crowley in terms of how he attempts to control the game?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think he, like, Eden Coughlin is a very good player. He actually, himself and Tony Butler did very well in terms of closing out the game last week against Edinburgh. But this is a different story. This is one of the biggest derbies in the world in front of what will be a huge crowd, massive intensity, and against, you know, a star-studded Leinster team full of not just internationals but British and Irish Lions. So you would imagine that Jack will take a lot of the responsibility on and try and look after and try and mind Coughlin, let him just do the basics really well. They're still going to have to kick from 9. And I think, you know, kicking contestable kicks is a good strategy for Munster against Leinster. Not saying that Leinster are weak there, but there's definitely a way of taking Leinster out of their stride. So the kicking game is going to be all important. Do you know what's another interesting battle is Michael Milne went down to Munster at the end of last season from Leinster, has started the season on fire and, you know, didn't make the Irish squad. Paddy McCarthy, who's got a couple of games for Leinster and was being very impressive, has got the nod, and he's getting the chance to start on Saturday. So that's another head-to-head, even though they're both loose heads, they're not actually scrummaging against each other. But that's another fascinating contest, I think, in terms of being able to judge, you know, who is who is furthest ahead now in terms of development. I think they're both outstanding players, but I'd say Michael Mayle feels a little bit hard done by this week when the Irish squad was selected.
Well, let's hear from another man in the front row. Leinster's Ronan Kelleher. Around Michael Glennon was speaking to the Leinster Hooker.
Naturally, every time we come up against Munster, it really narrows the focus. Obviously, that'd be one of our biggest, oldest rivals. So every time you go out, you want to put your best foot forward. All you can really focus on is your preparation during the week and trying to make sure that you're best suited to play the game on the weekend. And that's just doing a little bit extra bit of homework here and there. It's about knowing your opposition. And it is funny, like, cause obviously your enemy's one week and then your teammates the next. So you want to go into camp having them bragging rights. And it's a game you desperately want to win. And obviously, you know the players very well, having come up with them in... Is it, if it's true underage systems, if it's true Ireland squads, or in some cases in the likes of, I suppose, McMillan and Lee Barron, where they were our teammates last year and have moved down. So it'll be great catching up with them, but it'll also be great to get one up over them as well, all going well.
What is a successful season for Leinster?
Well, I suppose every year we have the same expectations. It's to win Europe and win the URC. So I think that's the answer there. Like, that's a successful season. And I think it's something that we hold ourselves to high standards and, I suppose, high expectations and high aims, knowing how tough it is to get there, knowing how difficult it is to win and get over the edge and the final hump. But as has been touched on before, they're the positions you want to be in. You want to be competing for the top honours at the end of the day. And I suppose you have to aim high. You have to look to try and be in it and hopefully win and get over the line. And so that's a successful season there, I think.
Ronan Kelleher there speaking, part of promoting the Tackle Your Feelings campaign, a mental wellbeing campaign driven and delivered by the Irish Rugby Union Players Association, the collective voice of professional rugby players in Ireland. Brilliant campaign indeed. And Bernard, Ronan touches on what is success for Leinster this season and the pressure that comes with that. The pressure on Munster, it's been well documented, 1-9 in this fixture. Does that psychological scar matter, or is it wiped clean under a new head coach, Clayton McMillan?
I think it goes a long way towards wiping it clean, to be honest, because different voice, different way of playing, different focus in terms of how they want to be as a team. And to be fair to McMillan, he's really gone researching, you know, what it means to be a Munster player and the history of Munster, whether it's, you know, beating the All Blacks or winning two European Cups and the legacy that those players have and the opportunity for these players. So he is selling an opportunity for them. It's very early for them in their development, but they have shown a lot of character in the last two games, actually. The first game, the quality was really good, away to Scarlett, so they got a bonus point win. But the last two games have had to dig and fight and manage their way through some scary enough moments, and I thought they did that with a fair bit of composure and lots of resilience. So he'll be really pleased with that. It'll take 6 months for him to really get them playing the way he wants them to play, but it's an unbelievable opportunity. You know, the pressure's all on Leinster. Leinster have some players coming back in, very good players, but players coming back in who haven't played a lot, certainly haven't played together recently. And that will give Munster hope that there's a few areas that just aren't fully in sync yet and they can go and exploit them.
Well, let's hear from the man himself now, Clayton McMillan, looking ahead to Saturday's showdown.
Another 10 changes to the team, Tadhg Beirne back in. Maybe just give me a little bit of thinking about your thoughts behind the selection.
Oh, look, we... fully aware of the challenge that's ahead of us, and you know, we've plumped for a bit of experience, and yeah, it's great to have Tadhg back in, you know, leading the team. We've rewarded people that we think have, you know, earned the opportunity to go out and play against Leinster in Croke Park, and that's what we want. That's what we want when we play these sorts of games.
You would have seen Munster versus Leinster, the rivalry, from a distance. What's it like being seeing it up close in the flesh in the build-up this week? Is there a noticeable increase in intensity around camp and even outside of that, the buzz it brings to people?
Yep. Yeah, there's definitely been that. I've sort of been waiting for this week to come because, as you guys will be aware, we've been trying to drive a mindset of, you know, it doesn't matter who we play, you know, what we do here from sort of Monday to Friday sets us up for a performance on Saturday. And I know we haven't, you know, been perfect over the last couple of weeks, but we've managed to get across the line and learn some things. But it was always interesting for me to see how, you know, the week would look and feel playing a game of this caliber, and there's been a noticeable, you know, excitement around the group. A lot more questions being asked. You know, leaders really stepping to the fore. Some real clarity around how we want to play the game. So yeah, it's been good. It's been enjoyable.
Munster head coach Clayton McMillan speaking to Michael Glennon there. You alluded to some of the areas that perhaps Munster might try and attack Leinster, Bernard. Do you expect a tactical battle or an emotionally charged scrap?
Hopefully both. I think Munster will need both to win. I would expect the emotional charge. That's a given. It's just whether they can actually put together a game plan that exploits the weaknesses they see in Leinster. And there wouldn't be very many, but based on what we saw this season, you know, the aerial game against the Stormers. I know they're different players, but that gave the Stormers a lot of entries into the game. Leinster's maul defence wasn't anywhere where it needed to be. Some of their kick chase wasn't as good as it needed to be as well. Now, you put in, you know, the quality of players that they have back this week, that should be fixed quickly. But it's some of them, it's their first game or their second game, and yeah, so you have to ask those questions. And like Prendergast, well, McMillan hasn't played against Leinster very much or ever. Prendergast and Leamy and Codling, you know, Codling last year have his assistant coaches, so they would have had things they tried under Graham Rowntree that maybe they got a little bit of success with, things that they thought they saw in Leinster that didn't work. And again, they just got to keep refining it until all that Munster need to be is better than Leinster for 80 minutes, you know. And if you are going to pull off a bit of a shock, certainly I would say early in the season when Leinster haven't really settled under their best team, or their best team haven't had game time together, you would say is the best possible opportunity. And Munster coming in on the back of a bit of confidence. On paper, it should be a Leinster win, given the internationals, even RG Snyman coming in there, obviously ex-Munster. You know, we know how good he is, but doesn't always be one on paper. So I'm fascinated to see what McMillan can get out of this Munster team in just his fourth game.
Who do you think will prevail?
I think Leinster looked actually quite sharp against them, against the Sharks, and Leinster don't have any more jokers to play. You know, those two away games, it's not the end of the world, but unfortunately now they have to start accumulating wins, and they'll also be listening into some of the narrative around a lot of that, you know, maybe too many Leinster players are in the Irish squad, etc. So the only way to bury that that chat is actually by being dominant. So I think Leinster will have enough, but I also expect Munster to be able to go toe-to-toe with Leinster for long periods of this game.
Before we speak about Connacht and indeed Ulster, just last one on Leinster-Munster. Obviously, the Ireland squad was named yesterday. In terms of individuals, who in the Leinster-Munster game has the most to gain from a big performance to catch Andy Farrell's eye?
Oh, I think to be honest, it's the two lads I mentioned earlier from Munster, Adogbo and Leeson. I know they're not officially in the squad for Chicago, but by being sent over there to prepare, you know, they're really putting their hand up, I think, obviously to play against Japan, but potentially if things go well against South Africa or Australia. I think it's a very steady Ireland squad, but I think Farrell will also be very conscious that he has to keep trying to find new talent as well as we work towards the World Cup or even the Six Nations. So there are two players that have the physical ability to be international test players. So I think they have a lot. If they lay down big markers, that's going to give them an unbelievable chance of getting captain this November.
Okay. Elsewhere, Ireland internationals Bundiaki, Finlay, Beelam and Mac Hansen will start for Connacht in their clash against Bulls tomorrow night. The British and Irish Lions are making their seasonal debuts for the club in the round 4 clash at Dexcom Stadium as Connacht look to bounce back from last weekend's defeat to Cardiff. Aki and Beelam play in their usual inside centre and tight head prop positions, while Hansen lines out at fullback. 4th time in a row for Connacht, he lines out at 15. Is Tommy O'Brien a man hoping that Andy Farrell will see Mac Hansen as a fullback?
I'd say he is for sure. And Jamie Osborne and Jacob Stockdale are hoping he doesn't. I think you'll see a lot of him at fullback for Connacht. I think Stuart Lancaster will want to get Mac Hansen on the ball as much as possible, and fullback gives him that opportunity. He enjoys playing there, and the Lancaster way is kind of a free-flowing type game, although we didn't see that last week against Cardiff, but that's traditionally how he wants the game to be played. So I'm excited by that. I think Mac, the Bulls over the last 3 weeks have been well able to score points, particularly at home, but conceding way too many points. And I think Stuart Lancaster will have seen a lot of attacking opportunities in that Bulls defence that having Mac Hansen at fullback will help him exploit.
At the Bulls, of course, beat Ospreys, Leinster in their opening two games, lost to Ulster in round three. Other team is for Connacht in the back scrum half. Caelan Blade is back out half. Josh Ioane returns, and Byron Ralston is at 13 to partner Aki. Will Connacht respond with a victory after last week?
Yeah, I think there was a big shock last week. Not the result, but how poorly they played, because they were so good in the first round against Benetton. There's such positive vibes coming out of Connacht all summer. So I would expect them a big reaction to that. And that'll be the challenge for sure Lancaster, is to make Connacht consistent. I think they've always been capable of having big performances, particularly at home, but they've lacked a little bit of consistency. So he'd want them to get back on track this week, and but then obviously be able to repeat that, whether they're in the sports ground or somewhere abroad in the URC.
There are only three unbeaten teams in the URC, Stormers, Munster and Ulster. So how important is it now for Ulster to build on their brilliant performance last week away to the Sharks on Saturday, 3 o'clock?
Yeah, look, given how the end of season finished for Ulster last year, getting that fast start is massive. They were very disappointed that that round two game against Edinburgh was postponed. But they're going down to South Africa, you know, in good health. They just dealt with a powerful South African team in the Bulls and were able to match that power in that first half before pulling away in the second half. And it was a very good defensive performance. They're going to play the two weaker South African teams, the Sharks and the Lions. Their Irish internationals have been sent down for that first game against the Sharks. And again, that's massive. So I think their best chance is of winning Saturday with the likes of Henderson and Stockdale involved. And I think Richie Murphy will have nothing to fear in the Sharks. The Sharks on paper are an incredibly good side, but unfortunately, their performance on the pitch doesn't come anywhere close to that. So this is a winnable game for Ulster. And there's a lot to like about how they're building there. He's got his own coach and staff. He's, you know, he's found some young players. He's recruited well. Augustus was exceptional last week. You know, he's got Angus Bell coming from the Wallabies after November. So if they could get a 6 points or 5 points out of this tour, they'd be in a great spot. Given the fact that it's quite early in the Richie Murphy rebuild with new coaches, etc.
Okay, great stuff. Connacht Bulls, 7:45 tomorrow. Sharks Ulster, 3 o'clock Saturday. And Leinster against Munster. Crow Park, 5:15 start for that one in the United Rugby Championship. For now, Bernie Jackman, thanks so much for taking the call.
Game on.
Association football.
Now, Maeve De Burke and Rebecca Cray are with us to preview this Sunday's Women's FAI Cup final. However, before we chat about this Sunday's final, some news reaching us, and really good news for League of Ireland Women's Premier Division teams, because the league are set to compete for two European places next season. So an historic first for the league. Next season's league champions and runners-up are now both set to qualify for the 2027-28 European competition. So the elimination of Minsk from the UEFA Women's Europa Cup this afternoon leaves Ireland safe in the qualifying rankings, as per Shelburne backroom team member Kev Doyle, known as Red Stats on Twitter. So massive credit to Kev for pointing this one out. Ireland sit 21st in the 24 qualifying spots, with just three active countries below. So the representatives of Bosnia, Hungary and Poland, Ireland cannot drop below 24th. So after securing back-to-back league titles, Athlone Town will be the league's sole European representatives once again in 26-27, pending approval of club licensing, of course. However, two teams are then set to compete in the 27-28. Rebecca Cray, I know you know Kev Doyle from your time at the Shelburne backroom team, but just how big of a boost is this for the League of Ireland?
Yeah, Shane, Kev's great man for the stats. He has all the numbers. But massive boost. Look, we've seen over the last few years, especially over the last 4 years or so, how competitive the league has been, you know, throughout the year. And I think this is going to be an added incentive now for all the teams competing. You know, obviously the big one will always be to win the league. But to have that extra spot now in European football is massive. Yeah,
absolute massive boost for the SSA. Airtricity Women's Premier Division. But we are here to talk about the Cup. So SSC Airtricity Women's Premier Division current champions Athlone Town facing Bohemian Football Club in the Sports Direct Women's FAI Cup final on Sunday. Kickoff at Talla Stadium is set for 3 o'clock live on TG Carr. Maeve de Burke, you're going to be part of the team there. Athlone back-to-back league champions going for the double favourites. How much of a chance or how big of an upset would it be for Bose to really step up and to, I suppose, unravel Athlone Town because they've been just so, so dominant of late?
Yeah, they really have. It would be a huge upset. Like you said there, Athlone are undoubtedly the favourites going into it, and they'll be looking to do the double, like you said. No one would really bet against them, but Bose have been going well, and I think they'll be well organised on the day. I think they'll have a game plan set out, and you know, it's a good way to go into a cup final at times, being the underdogs. Last year, you know, we saw Athlone versus Shells, which on paper was relatively an even game, but to Shells' credit, they ended up winning that one 6-1. So Athlone will definitely be, I think, heading into this one really possibly a bit more motivated even, and they'll know they'll need to turn up and have their best performance to beat Bowes, and are definitely capable of doing the double.
Well, let's hear from both camps now. Athlone manager John Sullivan, Bowes manager Alban Heise, we're speaking to John Kenny.
We have come under the radar, and rightly so. We have got a young team. We have done so well this season, not only in terms of, you know, reaching two finals, but also in the league, and you know, a young team which has been developed throughout the year. So, you know, it's great to see the progression and arriving into a place that we are now. You know, it's amazing to see for this team.
So what's been the atmosphere like in the club now in the build-up to the final?
The players are buzzing, the coaching staff are buzzing, you know, it's just we can't wait to get going on Sunday. So, you know, it has been amazing.
So what are you expecting then coming Sunday? Are you going to be a big crowd? And Athlone, well, obviously, as we started with this interview by saying that you perhaps come in as underdogs, so you've got a lot of work to do, so you must have a plan.
Yes, obviously, you know, all will be revealed on the day, but realistically, you know, we're expecting a big fan base in here, and hopefully that will be the 12th voice and give us a hand on the pitch when we'll need it.
Well, league is done and dusted now, John, so you can fully concentrate now on the FAI Cup. You obviously had a match at the weekend as well, just to wrap things up. How did that go for you against Sligo? Obviously, it was a nice celebration time, I'd say.
Yeah, it was good. The girls, like, it was great. They got to lift the trophy, celebrate, got pictures with their families and friends. Pretty sure they all went home to bed after that and recharged the batteries ahead of training.
I bet they did. Congratulations, by the way, on getting the job full-time. You were interim manager, obviously, for a short period of time. You must be delighted yourself.
Yeah, I'm over the moon. It's an amazing group. It really is. It gives me fantastic butterflies, but being honest, on my stomach to work with. They're a very, very inspiring group to work with, and I look forward to the future.
You actually took over a team that was obviously pushing on towards the league and obviously getting into a cup final as well. So I suppose you just need to tweak a couple of things. But I suppose next season, from your point of view, will be the season that you can put your own stamp on it. Isn't that true?
Yeah, look, everything's going well right now. I'm very lucky that I've came in and got to inherit a fantastic group, no doubt about that. Like, as I mentioned to girls before, it is their journey. Since coming in, I haven't asked a whole lot different or a whole lot more of them, just have to keep doing what we're doing, but we'll try and simplify the game a little bit better, or a bit easier, should I say. So far, so good. But in regards to next year, I'll be completely honest, I'm just thinking about today and tomorrow's training session, never mind the weekend.
Obviously that's something in the future, so tell us about the present then. Bohemians, what are you expecting?
Bohs are a very good side. If they weren't a good side, they wouldn't be here. They scored 40 plus goals, conceded 30-34, but they've scored a lot of goals. They'll bring the energy, they'll bring the fight. I'm pretty sure they'll bring a decent crowd. You know, it'll be a good game.
Don't have been here before, so what's the buzz like in the town?
Good. The mood is good, as always. People are happy. Everyone loves the girls. You know, they're always in and out of the coffee shops, and they get along very well with all the locals. They are like locals, if I'm being honest. They bleed blue and black, and they love the town. They absolutely love it. Like, someone even jokes in the US of A, and the A stands for Athlone. But yeah, everyone's in good form. They're looking forward to seeing the girls again this weekend.
There's certainly a big American presence in the Athlone Town team, and they're certainly doing very well. Rebecca, are you surprised with the seamless transition of John Sullivan as manager after Colin Fortune? Because Athlone finished so, so strongly when it could have been very destabilising.
Not really, to be honest with you. You know, these are, you know, seasoned veterans. Some of them, a lot of the players are involved the club now a long time, you know, and I think it was a case of just having that mental strength to push on for the last few weeks in the season. And you know, they have got that core group there, that, you know, the likes of Kelly Brennan and Roisin Molloy, Chloe Singleton, you know, Maddie Gibson now as well. And you know, I'm pretty sure that the players probably held the fort for a long period, obviously, until they got someone secure in John for the latter end. So look, it's not a case of being surprised. You know, a lot of people probably looked at it when Colin Fortune was stepping down as, you know, this is a place for the likes of Shells to now get on top. But look, as I said, you know, they've been here before. They've won it last season as well. So these kind of things you try to just keep in house and stay focused on what needs to be done. And they've very much done that, you know, and look, obviously going in to do that double this season is very much on the cards for them.
Yeah, Maeve, on those players Rebecca mentioned, Matty Gibson, Roisin Mhluaia and Kelly Brady in particular, they have potential to absolutely run riot. How do you try and suffocate them?
Yeah, they really do. That's the million-dollar question, and I suppose Bowes will be trying to implement some form of game plan to do that. I'd imagine that Bowes will probably sit in at early doors anyway and try to soak up that pressure a little bit and then try to counter-attack, hit them on the break if possible at all, because like you said, they're lethal players. Kelly Brady up top there, the league's top scorer this season, has actually called in to train with the Irish team next week as well, so really potent attack they have. I think they're just, yeah, like I said, they're going to stay, I think I'd imagine they'll stay compact and then just, yeah, try to counter attack where possible, I think.
Who are the Bowes players that stand out for you, Becca?
Yeah, there's a few there. Obviously, quite a young team, but obviously I'd be quite familiar with a lot of them, you know, coming from Shells Academies and underage setups. The likes of, you know, Hannah Healy obviously played in the final at some point last year, and, you know, she'll have that in her back pocket as well, having that little bit of experience, because it can be overwhelming, you know, coming into these big games. And you've Katie McCarron in there, and Ava Brennan as well has been fantastic this season in centre midfield. So I'm actually intrigued to see her battle against Hannah White off Athlone. But yeah, the likes of Hannah Healy, Ave Brennan, even at the back there, you've got the likes of Lisa Murphy, who's with Bowes a long time, probably one of the older ones in the group, but she's one of those no-nonsense defenders, you know, puts her foot through the ball. So it'll be interesting to see her battle up against Kelly Brady and see how she deals with her.
On Hannah Healy, an amazing story, and credit Anthony Pine, part of our online team. So Hannah Healy hasn't even turned 18 yet. However, she's already a Cup Final veteran. So you mentioned the final she appeared in last season, Becca, but this will be her fourth senior decider of her career. So in 2023, aged just 15, she excelled in the engine room for Shelburne, who ultimately lost to Athlone in a penalty shootout. Healy did score her spot kick. She came off the bench the following year when Shells gained revenge in spectacular fashion, hammering the Midlanders 6-1 in stormy conditions. At the end of August, she was on the wrong side of a penalty shootout when Bowes were beaten by Wexford in the All-Ireland Cup final. Just on Hannah herself, because Becky, you would have known her from your time at Shells, just how big of a talent is she?
Amazing. You know, she's got all the skill and talent in the world, and, you know, the likes of this experience, or that experience you mentioned, is invaluable and priceless coming into these kind of games. You know, you can have all that skill and talent, but if you haven't got that kind of mental strength in your locker as well, it can sometimes just be, you know, pointless. But she's one of those players that can just turn it on, you know, come on and make a difference in a game. And, you know, if she just, you know, gets a hold of the ball early and gets a feel for it, you know, we can definitely see her being a standout for Bowes on at the weekend, you know. But it is a case of just going into the game, and I think a lot of people are looking, you know, at the run that Athlone have been on this season, and, you know, being the favourites coming into it. But I think all league kind of games go out the window when it comes to Cup Final. It's a once-off. Anything can happen. And, you know, the two sides actually drew 2-2 at some point in the season as well. So, listen, it'll be all to play for come the weekend. And I'm definitely excited to see how Hannah fares.
Yeah, will Bowes take confidence from that draw earlier in the season in the league, Maeve?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the fact that they know they can do that already and they have that behind them, I think, like, that all they need is a draw on Sunday and win it on penalties. They don't even have to score in the match and they could win the cup. So I'm not sure if that's the approach they'll take, but still, they'll definitely have confidence from that. Although, like Becca said there, that Athlone have, you know, have had such great form, but yeah, all of that out the window, once off game on Sunday. And I think they'll be really looking forward to it. Like, the build up to an FAI Cup final isn't like other finals. Obviously, they did play Bowes. They have that experience of playing in the All-Ireland Cup final this year. Unfortunately, losing from their perspective to Wexford in that one on penalties. But I think that might stand to them as well. Hopefully the occasion won't overawe them and we'll be able to see a really competitive game between the sides.
Yeah, just on the benefits, Maeve, of competing in a Cup final. Okay, yes, they didn't get the result they would have desired. But Who are the leaders in the Bows dressing room and the experienced figures that may be able to calm some of the nerves, not only on the day, but even tonight, tomorrow, in the build-up in the build-up to the big match?
I think you'd be looking at the likes of Rachel Kelly there, their keeper and captain. She has such great experience, played international underage as well, and even beside her, Katie Lovely has been at the club since the beginning, really. They only started the women's section in 2020, so they'll have plenty of experience there. And even Lisa Murphy, who Becca mentioned, and as well, Roisin McGovern, all really solid players. And I think they'll try to bring a calmness, because I think it'd be really important that those butterflies and nerves will be kind of calmed and channeled in the right way in order to let them perform, because that's the one thing that you'd really hope for, that a team, you know, that doesn't have as much experience as them, they can those experienced players will be really vital to kind of have that good mix, then that blend of the such youthful energy as well, the likes of Hannah Healy and Ava Brennan. And I think Fiona Donnelly in that midfield area as well brings a good kind of balance too, although not too old, she'll definitely bring a good composure, I think. So they're well balanced, and if they're organised and get their game plan right, I think they will be capable of potentially causing a shock.
Becca, as Maeve mentioned there, 2020 for Bows to put energy into the women's side of the club. They finished seventh in the league, two cup finals. This is something that's been building in the last couple of years. And how exciting is the project there at the moment? Because there are a lot of young players buying into it.
Yeah, it's huge. Look, I had a brief spell myself with Bows when I was kind of trying to get myself back into some level of fitness, and you could tell from early days, you know, that they were passionate to get the women's side going, you know, and I think most definitely in this season they've grown into it. You know, last year obviously they were still kind of you know, filtering along in that middle kind of to the end section of the season of the table, but this year most definitely they've grown into their own, and you know, there's a major community base boost behind them. You know, you just look at the games on Saturday afternoons in Dalymount Park, the amount of families and, you know, young girls that come out to watch them, there is a huge incentive there to push the women's side of the game. And you mentioned there the likes of Rachel Kelly and Katie Lovely and all these kind of girls are dropping into schools, local schools, and getting involved in the underage setups, and that's what you need to do, you know, to keep people on board. So yeah, there's a massive drive there for the women's game, and they've been a credit to themselves in recent times, you know, to keep pushing that. And yeah, it's going to be a very exciting time, obviously, this weekend, but I'm sure going forward as well in coming years.
Maeve, Becca mentioned Rachel Kelly there, obviously Bows goalkeeper and captain. I will want to pick your brain on the Ireland squad and the absence of Courtney Brosnan from that shortly, but is this a final where we might see two goalkeepers who've had great seasons have a big say in where the cup might end up?
I think so, yeah, definitely. They've both, like I said, had great seasons, and Plasco from in between the Athlone sticks has been really solid as well. And I think they only conceded, Athlone only conceded 10 goals in the 22 league games. So as a back five, as you want to call it, the back four, and Plasco as well in goals, I think, yeah, they could really, between herself and Rachel Kelly, you'd wonder, you know, I'd expect that they'd be really important on the day. Maybe Rachel Kelly might have be a bit more the busier goalkeepers, you'd expect that anyway on paper, but she's so capable and like I said, has such experience behind her that it's going to be really interesting to see what keeper comes out on top.
Right, okay, prediction time. Maeve, I'll come back to you, but Rebecca Cray first. Who is going to be crowned Sports Direct Women's FAI Cup champions come Sunday afternoon?
Of course, you'd come to me first, didn't you? I can't even sit on the fence on this one. A never-ending draw. No, look, it's obviously on paper we're probably going to say Athlone, but look, I'd like to give a little nod to Bows, and I'm going to go for the shock factor. I'll give it to Bows.
Okay, you're going for the shock factor. Maeve de Burka, would you agree?
I'm going to say it's going to be tighter than last year's final. I don't think there'll be five goals between them, but I think Athlone might just edge it, I think.
Okay. One for Bows, one for Athlone. Maeve, I did allude to there the absence of Courtney Brosnan in the Irish squad that was announced yesterday. So, of course, Ireland-Belgium, Friday, October 24th. Then they will play away the following Tuesday. Both matches live here on 2FM's Game On. How concerning is the lack of Courtney Brosnan in an Ireland squad?
Yeah, it's a big concern, really. There's no way of looking around it. You know, she's played the last 40-odd games, bar one that she was suspended for, I think against Georgia, where Grace Maloney stepped in but didn't have a whole lot to do, in fairness. So, yeah, big experience, you know, from Courtney, and a big loss. But if the likes of Sophie Whitehouse, who's been in and around the squad for years now but is still uncapped, unfortunately, so just that lack of international experience, maybe, though, even though she is in great form, I think she's leading the WSL in clean sheets at the moment. And then, yeah, like I said, I expect Grace would be the one who'd step in. Grace Maloney, again, is doing well in the WSL too this season, and like that, she has been around the squad, but it's just that lack of competitive game time experience that hasn't been given to them, or even in friendlies and that. But look, hopefully one of them will step in and do the job.
Jet Sue and Jamie Finn both back after long injury and forced absences. How pleasing is it to see both Jess and Jamie back involved?
Yeah, it's great, really. I think Jamie's last cap was going back to December 23, so long time out, and very difficult, I'd imagine. Never suffered a long-term injury myself, but I from talking to the girls, it's really demanding, both obviously physically but mentally as well, and I'm sure they'd be absolutely buzzing to be back in, and what a camp to be in for as well. Really important games to try get promoted back to League A, and I think Jessu then in particular going forward, maybe we've been missing that kind of creative link player that she can be. I think she could even slot in that number 10 role and be really kind of pivotal to her attack going forward as well.
Okay, great. So we will be previewing that match in detail next week. Maeve de Burke, Rebecca Cray, thank you so much for your contributions on that. We're taking a short break, and then Jeff Shepherd is going to join us with his Eye on America.
Game on.
Eye on America.
We could take him away. I love the people of Boston. I know the games are sold out. But your mayor is not good. There are worse than her. At least she's intelligent. You know, some are extremely low IQ. Those bother me more. She's intelligent, but she's radical left. And they're taking over parts of Boston. That's a pretty big statement, right? We could get them back in about 2 seconds. No, I think she is hurting Boston. The answer is yes. If somebody is doing a bad job, and if I feel there's unsafe conditions, I would call Johnny, the head of FIFA, who's phenomenal, and I would say, let's move it to another location. And he would do that. He wouldn't love to do it, but he'd do it. Very easily he'd do it. And this is the right time to do it. If I thought Boston was doing something that was going to be cause safety conditions for the World Cup, I could say the same thing for the Olympics, because, you know, we have events that are in different locations for the Olympics. It's based in L.A. If I thought L.A. was not going to be prepared properly, I would move it to another location if I had to. On that one, I'd probably have to get a different kind of a permission, but we would do that.
President Trump speaking there with some divisive comments. Now, more than 1 million tickets for the 2026 World Cup have been sold during a pre-sale phase, World Football's governing body FIFA have said. And who knows where these fixtures may take place, if we're to believe President Trump. Shep, is there any concerns over Boston?
I mean, I really, the one thing is that this is early enough, you know, that maybe this can blow over. Or logistically, if something has to get moved, and I don't see why there's a reason other than just old timey American politics right now, you know, some he said she said things going on. But I mean, look, you all know. I mean, you put on big sporting events in Ireland all the time. I mean, you know, logistically, it's not like something just happens overnight, you know. And so if you're gonna move, you know, a game where you've got, you know, thousands and thousands of people flying into one location, and who knows where they could be coming from. You know, you need to do that early. And I mean, I hope that we don't get to the point where, you know, that games would be getting moved. I do think, you know, when it comes to the Olympics in a couple of years, you know, they just had some massive fires out in Los Angeles. That's a bit of a different situation. You know, that hopefully everything's rebuilt. I'm not exactly sure if any, you know, Olympic venues are, you know, had been you know, have been messed up at all. And, and to the president's point, there are going to be locations all across Southern California, and even in other states, even though the Los Angeles is the host city, they don't have the facilities for everything. So it is a bit of a different thing. But I'm just hoping that, you know, it's really early. and cooler heads will prevail. I mean, there's, you know, bigger issues going on when it comes to, you know, National Guard troops going into bigger cities across America and working on crime and stuff like that. So I think this is in reaction to all of that.
Okay, well, you mentioned wherever France may be flying in from, probably not from Ireland the way things are going, but that's for another day. Let's chat NFL. There was hope Dubliner Mark McNamee might see some game time heading into week 6, but it was announced this week that the Green Bay Packers released the International Player Pathway Program player and rookie kicker from the practice squad. So disappointing news. Is that the dream over now, or what next?
No. No, I don't think so at all, Shane. I mean, I think, you know, we've talked about it before. The benefit of having a player in this program on your roster is it basically doesn't count against your roster. So you can have someone there. And look, you know, we just had this conversation about Blake Groupe and Charlie Smith a couple of weeks ago with the Saints. And, you know, I was jokingly saying, you know, Charlie needed to really be warming up because Groupe wasn't really off to a great, you know, start to the season. And then last week he boots a couple of really good kicks in the Saints loss to the Patriots. I mean, kickers are literally like 1 week away at all times from losing their jobs. And so if you can have someone on your roster, even if you're stashing them and they don't count against the roster, I think that there's definitely an opportunity for him if he's kind of already acclimated to the game and is learning. You know, I mean, the Bears have had an injured kicker here the last couple of weeks. And, you know, so, I mean, there's always going to be a spot for somebody to land. So, no, I definitely don't think this is going to be the end of it for him.
Okay. Elsewhere, Tennessee fired head coach Brian Callahan. We had the Jets imploding in London. But talk to me about Patrick Mahomes, because we mentioned the Chiefs weren't being very Chiefs-like, but are they back as favorites now?
I mean, look, they have been great. They lost to Jacksonville in there, but their offense has done a complete 180. You know, they get Rashee Rice back this week. You know, they have the big win over the Lions on Sunday night. And the Lions are a formidable team from the NFC. They keep looking better and looking better. They're the opposite of the Jets. They're the opposite of the Titans, which is, you know, what you're seeing there. I mean, I think, yes, Mahomes is, you know, Patrick Mahomes' MVP odds are on the rise. The Chiefs' odds to make it to the, you know, deep into the playoffs, make it back to the Super Bowl are on the rise because Buffalo's been stumbling here the last couple of weeks. So, I mean, there's a couple of things that are kind of all factoring into it. They might have been slow out of the gate, but, you know, they look to be moving into good condition as you move into October and November, and that's what you want to be doing.
Okay. Elsewhere, the Patriots have pretty much uncovered their next superstar quarterback, and the Giants had a rookie surge. But let's look ahead at this weekend. So what catches your eye, Shep?
So one thing that I find interesting this week is that Miami's quarterback, Tua Tagovailoa, came out after the game last week and really kind of threw some shots across the bow at some of the other players on the team, talking about players not showing up for all players meetings and showing up late. He actually had to walk those statements back. Look, the Dolphins are not good. They haven't been good for the last couple of seasons. It's honestly kind of crazy that their coach hasn't been fired yet. They're in line for a serious culture shift in the next year or two, but very rarely do you see a player kind of come out and just take shots at the rest of the team like he did in the post-game locker room, in his post-game press conference last week. So you don't get a lot of that in football. And, you know, it was not well received. I'm sure they had to have a whole bunch of meetings about it this week. We'll see how they respond to it. The other thing, Shane, that I would look at is, you know, the Bills, they lose on Monday night in Atlanta. Atlanta's a very different team at home versus on the road, and Buffalo goes down there and struggles. And, you know, they've not played well the last couple of weeks. They jumped out the first month. They were kind of like, yeah, it looks like this might be their year, but here come the Chiefs. And so we'll just see if they can kind of try to keep, you know, get some momentum back on their side.
Okay, finally, 40 seconds or less. All news is local news. Are the Saints going to bounce back against the Bears following the defeat to the Patriots?
Look, I mean, the big news in Saints world this week, you know, has just been the wide receivers and the lack of help they're giving Spencer Rattler. And look, one thing, just not just with the Saints, but to look at, Shane, is in the next couple of weeks, November 4th is the trade deadline in the NFL. So you could see some teams that are out of it this year start to unload some assets. The Saints have three or four that they could potentially move around the the league, Alvin Kamara, Chris Olave, Taysom Hill, and you could start building and getting additional draft picks for the future, which is a smart move. It sucks for your season ticket holders this year, but long term, that's what you need to do to rebuild the franchise.
Okay, great stuff. Well rounded. Jeff Shepherd, thank you for joining us as always. That is all we have time for this evening. Big thanks for tuning in here to Game On. We're back tomorrow from 6 o'clock. Today's show was produced by Ronan Lawler, and our broadcast coordinator was Jarlett Holland. Up next here on 2FM, the new music show with Better De Silva, not to be missed. From all of the Game On team, have a great evening. It's bye for now.
This is 2FM.